I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dinosaurs went extinct, give or take 80 million years. Am I right about that?
A little bit more recent than that. So dinosaurs went extinct 66 million years ago when this massive asteroid hit off the Yucatan Peninsula.
And then it wasn't too long after that, well, 6 million years, give or take, that we're seeing these fossils now of grape seeds, which I think is really interesting.
Mike, why are you so concerned about grape seeds 60 million years ago?
Well, because the asteroid that wiped out the dinosaurs ate the grapes that we now use to make wine. Or maybe it's that the asteroid fertilized the soil and allowed the grapes to grow.
I can kind of see where you're headed. And to be honest, I thought the same thing until we actually dug into this one. And that's thanks to headlines like this from CNN, "We can sip wine because the dinosaurs died." Or this from Smithsonian Magazine, "Did the extinction of the dinosaurs pave the way for grapes?"
Now, wait a minute. Are you saying that the media may have written a sensational headline designed to make someone more likely to click on it?
I think that just might be the case. And as we'll learn, there may not be a direct link between the extinction of dinosaurs and the growth of grapes in the Western Hemisphere, but they both may have been sparked by the same event.
Now, that's one of our producers, Chris Blake. I'm Mike Rogers. This is Something Offbeat. This week, I spoke to Monica Carvalho, the assistant curator at the Museum of Paleontology at the University of Michigan and a co-author of a study tracing the origins of grapes in our hemisphere. And she was kind enough to join me while she was off doing some field research in Bogota, Colombia.
Are there older grape fossils in the Eastern Hemisphere than there are here?
Yes. So the earliest record we know of, grapes, so the family, the plant family called Vitaceae, they go back to a little bit before the dinosaurs went extinct. So something around 68 million years ago, and they're found in India. So back then, India was kind of this huge island that was drifting across the ocean before it crashed against Asia. So it was at a different, a little bit more of a tropical latitude than it is today. So those are the earliest grapes that we know of. And then the second earliest ones are the ones we just recently discovered in Colombia that date 60 million years, so a little bit after 6 million years after the extinction of dinosaurs.
So do we have a definite cause and effect here? I mean, why would grapes not be able to flourish simply because the dinosaurs were present?
Yeah, so it's not that they were not able to flourish. So what we see with the extinction of dinosaurs, and it's not the extinction of dinosaurs per se, it's the same cause of this massive extinction that was planet-wide. So what we see planet-wide is that this event caused a before and after in ecosystems. So with the extinction, there was a whole restructuring of these environments. And one of the things that we see almost globally, but especially in tropical latitudes, is that flowering plants really became the most dominant, so biomass-producing dominant group all around the globe. And one of the things we see is that associated with that kind of massive change in ecosystems, we can think about it as a reset. Everything was just reset. And with that reset, there's this origin story of all modern ecosystems. So what we see today is really a byproduct of that massive catastrophic event.
This gets deep pretty quick, doesn't it?
Boy, you're telling me. It sounds like what she's saying is that the asteroid changed everything. Would humans even exist if it hadn't happened? Probably not. You and I wouldn't be sitting here right now talking about it because we wouldn't exist.
Why are we here? Does anything we do even matter?
You know, if you think about this too long, you could really get into a full-blown existential crisis.
And in all seriousness, are you someone who thinks about history-altering events?
You know me well enough to know the answer to that question. I am, actually. So I've got a book of, they're called counterfactuals. These are historical hypotheticals. For instance, the guy who killed the Archduke Franz Ferdinand in Sarajevo back in 1914, that started World War I, he actually missed his first opportunity because the motorcade was going too fast. And he only got a second chance because the Archduke's car made a wrong turn on the way back to the train station. If it weren't for that driver making a wrong turn, you could argue that perhaps World War I never would have happened. And then World War II. And then the Cold War. Everything would have been different. And it's the same with that darned asteroid.
I definitely don't go down those sort of rabbit holes very often. But maybe I should, because I get so wrapped up in the insignificant things day to day. Maybe a little apocalyptic thinking would do me some good.
So it wasn't the dinosaurs that prevented them from flourishing, grapes, that is. But in fact, it was what killed the dinosaurs, I guess, that set into effect this chain of events that allowed them to flourish. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. It was this whole chain of events. So one of the things that happened when dinosaurs went extinct is that they left open this kind of niche for other groups. So, birds, mammals, these are some of the groups that really started flourishing once in the animal realm, once dinosaurs went extinct. And it's not a coincidence that both birds and mammals, they're the primary primary mediators for plant dispersal, especially flowering plant dispersal, because a lot of these flowering plants produce fleshy fruits that attract these sorts of dispersers, both mammals and birds.
Just curious as to how these fossils were found. I mean, how can a seed result in a fossil? Bones, yeah, I understand that, but plant seeds?
that's a great question, because in general, when we think about fossils, we never think about plants. We think about these large bones, and it makes sense. You know, they're hard structures, they're large. But within the plant realm, we can find various types of fossils. So we can find leaf compressions. So sometimes we open up, we split open rocks, and we see they almost look like drawings of leaves. We can also find petrified stems, so fossil wood is fairly common. And when we think about seeds or fruits, especially kind of hard fruits, seeds have this very, very resistant seed coat. And because it's hard, and because these things are fairly small and abundant, once they go into a river or they're transported by a river and they fall down into some environment that's conducive to fossilization, they can actually preserve very nicely.
What did these 60 million year old grapes, what were they like? Do they even resemble what we have today, or have they evolved?
They resemble what we have today. That's the reason why we're able to identify them as grape seeds, so members of this big family called Vitaceae. And this family there are many species living today. So there are about 1,100 species, mainly distributed in the tropics, so tropical Asia, Africa, the Americas. But it's also, most grapes, commercial grapes that we know of, they live in subtropical to temperate areas. So some of these species can actually go beyond the tropics, but most species are tropical. And there's a big diversity of these seeds, which allow us to identify different groups. And when we find them as fossils, we can actually place them within the different groups that are living today.
With plants and these grapes in particular, I guess they're a lot like animal species. They start in one spot and they kind of spread around the world, don't they?
Yes, that is exactly true. And the evolution of plants is also closely related to the evolution of animals, or maybe vice versa. It's a co-evolution between.
You know, Mike, this is interesting, but when we set out to research this episode, I was hoping for a little more wine talk.
Nothing wrong with that. No reason we can't talk wine. It's our show.
I agree. I usually don't bother you guys when you're recording, but I didn't want to miss this.
Wait a minute, Lauren, where'd you come from?
I knew you guys were talking about wine today, so I thought I'd drop in.
All right, then. Why don't you tell us, what is it exactly that you're drinking while Chris and I work so hard?
Well, I'm actually drinking a Coke Zero right now because I'm working on some digital articles, not wine. But I was wondering what your favorite wines are.
Well, for white, I usually go Sauvignon Blanc, and red, Pinot Noir.
Yeah, actually, I cooked last night with a very nice Chardonnay. And yeah, there was some leftover for the cook.
Now I want to know what you made.
It's a French dish called steak au poivre. And if you're going to do French cooking, you got to have wine, and you got to have a lot of butter.
That's true. I love that.
That's very true. But Lauren, I'm curious because we've talked about how you worked in restaurants. What are some of your most interesting wine stories?
Well, when I first started working in restaurants, I was actually a teenager. So the first few years I worked, I didn't have to open any wine bottles because I was legally too young to open them. But then once I was, you know, going to be 21, my boss was like, you can't get away with that anymore. You're going to have to open the wine yourself. And we had a very special, not very special, but at the restaurant that I worked at, they like to do proper wine service, which is kind of complicated. You have to hold the bottle at certain angles. You have to have a napkin on your arm the right way. You can only pour with one hand holding the bottle. And it stressed me out a lot because you have to like perform it to people. So I practiced a lot. I bought a bunch of wine before my first time opening the bottle and everything. But it didn't really seem to matter because when the day came around, when I finally had to open a bottle in front of my table, the opening process starts with you can't just pull the label off. You have to cut it open in a circle and pull it off and then make a little boot for the wine cork so your table can smell it. And while I was doing that, I cut my hand, but I was so nervous that I didn't realize it. And it was a big party that I was serving, so I was stretching all around the table, and I managed to finish. I poured everybody's wine. I didn't spill on anybody, but then I got to the last person, and he was like, do you know that you just bled all over the table? And they weren't thrilled about it. They were pretty grossed out. Luckily, there was no food on the table yet, so I could just clean it up. Pretty embarrassing first time opening wine for everybody. I've since gotten better.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that you knocked the cork down into the bottle, but that was way worse.
You know what? That might have been worse for me. Like, I was like, after I was done, I had to like bandage myself up and stuff. I was like, at least I didn't spill the wine on anybody. And my coworkers were like, no.
And that was the last time Lauren served wine.
I'm impressed. If you were nervous going into it, that must have just affirmed every fear you had.
Well, yeah. But I was like, you know what? I survived bleeding all over the table. So the next time will probably be better.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What else did you learn about grapes during this field work?
So our research has been looking into the evolution of tropical forests in the Americas. So what we call neotropical rainforests. And what we do is that we look for fossils of various ages and try to reconstruct what these forests look like, how they changed, who lived there. And what we have found for the grape family is that not only did we find these kind of 60 million year old seeds, we have seeds that are of various ages. So 40 million, a little bit younger, 40 million years old and 20 million years old, 30 million years old. And what we see is that a lot of these seeds that we find as fossils, they are no longer found, or the groups they belong to, they are no longer found in the Americas. They are groups that are restricted to Southeast Asia or Africa or Australasia. So what we're seeing is that these groups, now restricted to Southeast Asia, were once living in the Americas. And through the last 60 million years or so, there has been a lot of regional extinction. So there's a lot, we think about the dynamics of biodiversity, there's a lot of turnover. There's a lot of things that move in and move out. And that complicates, or rather, it makes a lot more of an interesting story when we think about trying to understand the history of biodiversity and the history of life on the planet.
Are there other examples of fruits or vegetables that have evolved like this and spread around the world?
Oh, yes, a lot of them. One of the most common patterns that we see in the fossil record is that if you go back in time to moments in history where the world was a lot warmer than it is today, so going back about 50 million years ago, we can see that in North America and in Europe, there are a lot of plant groups that were mainly tropical. So there is a plant family, the moonseed family. It's this family of vines. And today they're mainly found in tropical areas, but they were very, very widespread during these moments of global warmth 50 million years ago. So we find them in North America and we find them in Europe as well. So it's a fairly common pattern when we see these dynamics of plants and the animals that eat them spreading to different continents or spreading to different areas, and then through time changing their distribution or moving back to lower latitudes.
Are there some practical applications to what you've learned, you know, to this research in terms of understanding agriculture and ecosystems?
In terms of understanding ecosystems, yes. So one of the things, or the primary things that we look for in the fossil record with these dynamics, are, you know, the causes and consequences of extinction. And what we see here is, you know, the radiation, the diversification of modern grapes is related to, or it was kind of enabled by this catastrophic event, mass extinction 66 million years ago. But when we look at the dynamics of that extinction in a short time period, so not in terms of millions of years, but shorter, we see that the recovery process of ecosystems, once they're destroyed, is very, very slow. It takes millions of years for groups to start evolving, to start diversifying, and for diversity to recover. So when we think about, you know, those dynamics of ecosystems, especially today, we see that it's a very delicate balance. Once something goes extinct, a lot of other things go extinct. And for this diversity to come back, it's something that occurs in the scale of millions of years, something that can be destroyed in basically an instant, which was this extinction that, you know, killed off the dinosaurs and other critters 66 million years ago. That was just a moment. That was a very, very brief moment in geologic history. It changed forever the history of life on the planet, and it also took millions of years for life to recover.
Like the asteroid, it wasn't real good for the dinosaurs, but for wine lovers, it was just awesome.
Oh yes, it was awesome. We can thank the asteroid for being able to enjoy a nice glass of wine.
I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode written and produced by sommelier Lauren Barry and Chris Blake. Audio editing by Bree Flores and original music by Myron Kaplan. And to keep listening, please subscribe to us on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast. And if you have your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, send it to us at somethingoffbeat@Odyssey, AudacyY.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.